RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Dr. Raphael Letesta holds a PhD from University of Sydney, occasionally lecturing there and at other institutions. His main academic research interests include misinformation, disinformation, and fake news in health and politics. He has a Bachelor of Pharmacy, a Master's of Applied Finance, and several postgraduate research degrees in the arts. Initially focusing his academic efforts around misinformation in religion, he shifted focus to misinformation in politics and health, particularly around COVID-19. He had a letter published, you may have heard about this, in the Australian Journal of General Practitioners, AJGP, in July, asking, should we now discuss possible COVID-19 negative effectiveness? I want to read you this from that letter. This makes it plausible that the COVID-19 vaccines have always had an effectiveness that was very low, zero, or even negative, with inadequate methods allowing for a highly exaggerated effectiveness initially, an exaggeration that is lessened with time. So I want to welcome Dr. Raphael Letesta onto RCR. Thanks for giving us some time, Raphael. Nice to have you.
My pleasure.
That letter, we heard about that. It was seen as at last a bit of light shining through at the level that many of us have been wanting to see for quite a long time. Is that what people have told you?
I haven't heard that, no. I think I've just heard that now.
Well, for it to be published through that.
A lot of people, around the world got it. Even General Flynn, a friend of Donald Trump, President Trump, even he shared it. It was just, amazing. Yeah. It went everywhere.
Okay. What does that mean then, having that on that website published through the Australian Journal of General Practitioners? What does that mean?
That means that there is some recognition that something of what I'm talking about here, I've been doing research against the COVID vaccine narrative, the mainstream narratives for some time, that some sort of recognition that not everything here is crazy, that some of the things we're saying here are very plausible. The Australian Journal of General Practitioners is the journal, literally the journal for Aussie doctors, right? Your family doctors, your community doctors. And they all get it. I can't guarantee they've all read it, but they all had to sit there and get my little article there, as well as the related ones, the original article by Tyndall and the reply by Tyndall. And there are a few more replies as well that all added to this really interesting discussion, showing that there's actually quite a few doctors and scientists in this country, in Australia, if not the world, but in Australia, that actually agree there's something more to this. The jabs are causing a lot of problems. Long COVID is maybe more appropriately called long jab. And the point I was pushing is that we keep seeing this weird phenomenon, really scary phenomenon, of negative effectiveness. That means the jab makes it more likely, if this is correct, if the jabs are negatively effective, it means they make it more likely that you get COVID, even die from COVID, which is, of course, why would you take the vaccine? That goes completely against the whole point of it.
Does that then go with the anecdotal evidence a lot of us have of people on a continuous cycle of COVID infection? Seems to happen. I know someone's had it six times.
Yeah, it sounds like you're describing President Biden or St. Fauci or any number of people, public figures that have said they've taken, eight boosters by now and they just keep getting COVID. Here I am. I'm unvaccinated. That's why I was fired from my job at New South Wales Health. And I had it once and it was the most benign thing. Regular colds for me are far worse with the sore throat and everything. COVID for me was a walk in the park, was absolutely a complete nothing burger. Just had it the once. I've been exposed to it many more times after that, but I guess that's the strength of natural immunity. I haven't got it since.
Okay, so describe how this thing works. Is there any period of time where there is some kind of immunity? How quickly does it wane, and when does it go negative? Do you know that?
That is something that I'm trying to get the scientific medical community to actually look into and find out. Because what we're seeing is bits of evidence here and there of some sort of negative effectiveness, whether it's for infections or hospitalizations or deaths. When does it start? Was it always negatively effective? Is it because of new variants? Is it because the vaccine just wanes in effectiveness over time? What is it? We don't know. But I will tell you this. My research journey started in all this because I was fired from New South Wales Health and I was building my legal case. So I basically was forced to do this research. Yep. And the first bits of research were alongside the BMJ's Peter Doshi, one of the senior editors of the BMJ, one of the world's biggest journals. And together, he did two articles, I did two articles. We had four articles in the JECP journal. And we collectively showed that the way they manipulate the data by playing around with the definition of vaccinated, unvaccinated, it highly exaggerates the effectiveness and safety of the vaccines. And I showed it's even plausible that the vaccines could be negatively effective and yet because of these manipulations appear to be effective. So we don't actually know when it comes to negative effectiveness. We don't know if it's legitimate. We don't know when it started. But I've shown mathematically, using the Pfizer trial data, it's possible they were always negatively effective. So this is something, this is why I end all these articles to do with negative effectiveness. I had a rapid response on this in the BMJ as well. So we need to really look into this. We need to find out what the heck is going on here.
What are the exaggerations you talk about?
Okay, so many of us had this you know, cynical thought when they first came out with the vaccines and they're telling us what vaccinated means. And they had this weird thing where you were only fully vaccinated, say, 2 weeks, might be 1 week, 3 weeks, but usually about 2 weeks after your second dose. So months after you first got a vaccine, right? So if you look back to the clinical trials, they actually did this in the clinical trials and you're thinking, hang on. So this is potentially months, definitely weeks of data that's just, it's just gone. You know, these people are getting COVID infections and it doesn't count because they're only considered vaccinated from 2 weeks, roughly, after the second dose of the mRNA COVID vaccines. So because of that, there is an imbalance, especially if they don't have this gap in time for the unvaccinated. There's a bias there, but even without the bias, they are overlooking highly relevant data. They are overlooking COVID infections in people that actually took the jab because of some, I would say, arbitrary notion of what fully vaccinated is, rather than just, we gave this person the jab, we didn't give that person the jab, let's see what happens. It's no, we're going to ignore everything up until the point we determine that they're fully vaccinated. Now, that's a big chunk of time, especially when we see effectiveness drop really quickly, like it's gone within months. That's a huge chunk of time. So anything there, even if it's a short amount of time, everything there is relevant. You don't magically just, they swab you and boom, you're fully vaccinated. You go on a journey for a few weeks, maybe even a few months to become fully vaccinated. And a lot of things might happen then. That is all part of the journey. That has to be factored in. So by overlooking that, and in the worst cases, they don't just overlook these cases in the vaccinated, in the people that receive the jab, they actually ascribe them to the unvaccinated.
Oh.
So there are people that would even die of COVID and they're listed as unvaccinated when they actually took the jab. It's just because they have determined, oh, it was this many days out, so we're going to consider them unvaccinated. So because of this, I mean, it just sounds like complete corruption and manipulation here. Because of that, you have these massive exaggerations. Doshi's team said it was about 48%. When I redid the calculation showing what happens when they actually call these infections, when they ascribe them to the unvaccinated, it's more like 65%. So the vast majority of the stated effectiveness from the very beginning, from the clinical trials, when COVID was at its deadliest, right, was nothing, was exaggerated. So already back then, it looks like the vaccine should never have been approved because you subtract that from the 90-something percent effectiveness, you've got less than 50%, right? It should never have even been approved.
The term fully vaccinated, is that a regular term, do you know, in the world of vaccination, or is that a recent combination of words? Just curious.
I have been trying to find that out, and it's been pretty hard to find out. I've even gone through and found an article from the 70s, I think it was 1979, where they were debating back then about counting windows. When should you start? What should you ascribe? So I think these issues aren't really settled. And it seems to me quite arbitrary because I've looked at different vaccine studies. I've looked at flu vaccines and whatnot, and you tend not to see these markers or at least not consistently. They're all over the place. Like I saw one for HIV where it's like we don't really consider it until 6 months later after a booster. So it really seems arbitrary. The issue for me is that however you want to look at it, this period of time, wherever you put it, is relevant. We need to look at what's happening in that period of time. We can't just throw away that data, or even worse, give it the wrong label, say everything that's happening there is happening in the unvaccinated, because that is obviously tipping the scales. That is not an honest way of looking at the data and trying to find out whether it's worth taking this product or not.
Well, it's not even a sensible way of looking at it, is it?
I wouldn't think so. I would think you would look at the very first moment that the needle goes in the arm. I mean, we know it is well established. I shouldn't say we know, but it is well accepted in the medical community that most of the side effects from the jabs come within the first 6 weeks.
Mm.
Well, okay. And we know the mechanisms behind that. So why are you ignoring all this data then, you know, within the first couple of weeks? It's mind-blowing.
Well, it kind of screams out, Raphael. It kind of screams out, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there comes a point, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, I'm an academic, but there comes a point where you see so many things going wrong, and they're not little mistakes, they're really big mistakes. It has cost people's lives. People have died from the jab. We know that. We can argue over the amount, but we know that people have died from the jab. So these are like seriously important things that are happening. These are huge mistakes that have happened, and they've happened all over the world in pretty much the same way, you know, in almost every country. You get Sweden saying no to the lockdowns, you get the odd African country saying no to the jabs, but generally all over the world, they've done all these things, made all these mistakes at the same time, and at the same time, we know the governments of the world are legitimately lying to us. Not just that they got things wrong, but that they lied to us. Like when they said that in America, that the jabs would stop transmission, they would stop infection even. And then at the same time, even weeks earlier, they were talking about breakthrough infections. They knew it was a lie when they said it, right?
Yeah.
They also, America was recently caught out, the American government, going on an anti-vax campaign throughout Asia. And, you know, from a perspective of a pro-vaxxer, you'd say, well, wow, they're anti-vaxxers and liars. But even from the perspective of maybe the more critical people like ourselves, we might say, well, okay, maybe they were right that the Chinese vaccine was bad, but they were still very deceptive in how they did it because they went through social media and used fake accounts and bots and all that. So whichever way you look at it, the American government was lying. They were caught lying. They've admitted it. And then they just had this response like, eh, it happened. No apology, no nothing, no consideration of the lives potentially lost from their actions. So these people that did this to us with the vaccine approvals, the vaccine mandates, the lockdowns, they are demonstrable liars. We know that. So why would you trust them for anything else? You know, it boggles the mind why people would trust them.
Yeah, I'm not an academic, so my suspicious mind can range free. Okay, so what it says to me is that you knew what could happen. I'm talking about, you know, the they that we keep talking about.
Yep, they.
You knew the period of time that is crucial. So you create this label of fully vaccinated and you put an arbitrary time on it, which connects with the time that you already know, that you've already have advanced knowledge of. And that then becomes part of the deflection, persuasion, whatever you want to call it, sort of psyop. People have all sorts of labels for it.
Yeah.
That's a plausible scenario, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go back to those JCP4 articles, the two articles by Doshi's team, the two articles by my team, which is just me, you see that you can make a 0% effective vaccine look like it's 48% effective because of this time delay. And I showed you can actually make a 0% effective vaccine look 65% effective by just mislabeling, you know, by saying this is all happening in the unvaccinated, not in the vaccinated. So, I mean, it's proven mathematically. No one's been able to refute it. We had one response outside of our four articles, and it was retracted because it was garbage. It was retracted. None of my articles have been retracted. Doshi's articles haven't been retracted. There have been a few articles that were retracted from people, you know, more on our side, but my ones have not been, and neither have Doshi's. But the one that was a response to our articles, that one was retracted. We have not had in the literature or anywhere else that I know of a proper refutation of what we're talking about here, of how they've manipulated the data to exaggerate effectiveness and safety. So that ties in nicely to the concept of negative effectiveness, because it is plausible. I showed it mathematically. It is plausible. And this would explain why we're seeing this now, it would explain why the vaccine effectiveness goes down really quickly, which everybody acknowledges. That they even use that. They use that to say you need your booster, right? Because the effectiveness goes down really quickly. Well, this would be explained by having vaccines that never worked in the first place or even were negatively effective. And as I said in that piece, time washes that out to some extent. It'll never get it back to what it should be, but to some extent you see that. So over time you see, wow, the vaccine's actually not effective anymore. That's really weird, when natural immunity will last you a lifetime potentially, or a very long time anyway. We don't have anything definitive with that for COVID. Seems to be going well for me. But then this vaccine, you know, God's gift to mankind, it's gone within months. How do you explain that? That's ridiculous. That's utterly ridiculous. And even going negative, that's beyond ridiculous. Even increasing your chance of getting COVID, even dying from it. How do you explain that? And I think it's plausible. That's because it was always negatively effective, and they only made it look effective because of how they manipulated the data.
That is so freaky, isn't it?
Yeah. truth is stranger than fiction. There is so much that is freaky. I've not just been looking into COVID in the last few years. I've been looking into a few other things. And one thing that struck me was that the same few people own basically everything. They own all the big companies. They own all the important farmland. What George Carlin said a few decades ago sounded like some conspiracy theorists just having a laugh. It's easily verifiable as true right now. You just have to jump on Google, which is part of it. It brings up some CNN money, CNN business pages, which is also a part of it. They're part of the companies owned by them. And then you look at it and you look at who the top shareholders are. And then you look at these asset managers, who owns them. They own each other. They own themselves and they own each other. And by definition, the people that own these big asset managers, you know, the index funds and so forth, maybe you and I have 0.001% of something in our super or our pension accounts. But obviously the people that have billions invested in these organizations are the ones that really own it. They control the voting rights. They get to say who gets to be on the board, who runs the companies and so forth. And it's the same few people. So it's not even a conspiracy theory anymore. A few decades ago, it would be. But now you just jump on the internet, a few searches away, you've got that information. I've got that. If you're interested in that, I've got that on my OK Then News page. It's the owners of series, owners of this, owners of that. And I show that the owners of Big Pharma are also the owners of the mainstream media, which is what Woody Harrelson got in trouble for making a joke about. He was right.
Yeah,
he was right. The owners of Fox News are the same owners of CNN.
And that's why Tucker's gone.
Hey, Tucker's gone. Tucker exactly. Carlson. And there was that Brianna who left as well over the vaccine mandates. So they're clearly not what you'd think they are. And even Coke and Pepsi, if you can believe it, lifelong enemies owned by the same people.
Yeah, once you understand that, the they comes into focus.
Suddenly makes sense, isn't it?
Pretty clearly. But the question is, and you fought, and I think won against New South Wales health vaccine mandates. Am I correct about that? Twice.
Just like Trump with his two wins against impeachment or against ousting, rather.
Well, even two elections, maybe.
Arguably the two elections as well, yeah. I mean, they kind of admitted it in that Time magazine article. They kind of admitted that the big end of town, colluded to make sure he wouldn't get in so that they could protect democracy. They literally said that. It's quite shocking. And also with the whole laptop gate and the Russia gate thing, that all turned out to be, you know, lies on the mainstream.
Yeah, true or lies, depending on how you see it. Yeah.
And then they did polls in the swing states, finding out that this sort of stuff could have actually swung the vote for Trump. It kind of looks like they did steal the election, even if it's not, you know, Joe Biden sitting there in the basement filling in dodgy ballots.
Yeah.
In some ways, with how they manipulated people, they probably did steal the election. But I did beat, in a sense, the New South Wales health vaccine mandates. I got some justice. I've got two wins so far. So that's a recognition that they caused me harm, that New South Wales Health caused me harm with their conduct around the vaccine mandate. And one thing they did that was really horrible was they got us to make a case for why we shouldn't be fired. And they dangled this bit of hope in front of us that maybe we could give you part-time at-home jobs. And I thought, yes, I've got a part-time at-home job. That's me. I'll be right. I wasn't right. I did my case, and all they did with it was just say, well, there you go. You refused to take the jab. You admit it.
Okay, so they let you hang yourself in front of them kind of thing. And this is what I was sort of heading towards. So you've had a couple of wins. But over here, and I'm sure the same where you are in Australia, the attitude of the governing bodies of the various disciplines, you know, doctors, nurses, have been very aggressive towards anyone who didn't toe that line.
Yeah.
Like, you know, excessively so. And then there's all this kind of buy-in, you know, we're talking Vanguard and BlackRock, let's say the words. There was that buy-in to the product from the establishments of state, of, you know, health systems, judiciary even favoring that. Incredible messaging, constant all the time, massive advertising budgets, all of that, running people like you out of town. I've always wondered what someone had something over them. They must have. What do you think that was? How do we explain the lockstep? And, you know, they really looked like they believed what they were saying, you know?
You could see it as, you know, someone's got something over someone. To some extent, that's got to be true. I like to see it as, well, it's one big club, isn't it? Big Pharma is owned by the same people that own the media that promoted Big Pharma's products, including the jabs. Big Pharma is the one that funds the regulators. I don't know what it's like in New Zealand, but everywhere else, it's 80-something, 90-something percent of the funding of these regulators, which are government agencies, their funding comes from Big Pharma. Big Pharma owns them. Big Pharma owns part of the government, right? So to me, it's like, it's just the same group of people. And then you see the revolving door of people that work for Big Pharma, work for the regulators, and they go both ways. And you've got the big politicians like Julia Gillard that go and work for those big charities that also are invested in the jabs. And you think it's one big club, isn't it? It's like George Carlin said all those years ago, it's one big club and you're not in it.
And you're not in it, yeah.
You're not in the big club.
Do you think a lot of them took the jabs or kind of sidestepped because they knew?
Yes and no. I heard from when I was in the States earlier this year presenting evidence for the US Senate, Senator Johnson told me that there were several of his colleagues, I think in the Senate, maybe Congress people, but I think in the Senate, that confided to him that they were suffering from vaccine injuries. Mm. So, I mean, some politicians no doubt took the jab. But I would imagine if they knew the people really, if they knew the jab was off, well, I imagine they wouldn't have taken it in the same way that people like Steve Jobs wouldn't let his children have an iPhone, you know, and Zuckerberg and so forth, right? They know what these products could do to people. So it's hard to know. I did find it quite interesting that a lot of the federal governments would not mandate, when they did mandate the jabs for others, they wouldn't mandate it for themselves. It's just some of the things, it's just what is this? It's like they're not even trying to hide that something dodgy is going on.
I think as part of when you went to the US, I think you presented along with Dr. Robert Malone. Is that correct?
Yeah, some people might have heard of him.
Yeah, my boy, have I. And the reason we haven't had him on RCR yet. We've had Peter Malone, Naomi Wolf, all those on. But the reason his name jumps out at me is because very early on in all of this, so that would be early 2021, I was listening to him being the father of mRNA, I think is probably fair to say.
Yeah.
And everything he said could happen has happened.
Is this the talk with... He was with Steve Kirsch and...
Steve Bannon, Steve Kirsch, all those people. He was talking about antibody enhancement. I can't remember the terms.
Brett Weinstein.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, wow, this is mind-blowing. And now I see with time passed, and the reason I mention this is before anything rolled out here, the information was there. This guy knew what he was talking about.
Mm.
And it's all happened pretty well, as he said it would.
The very notion of how these jabs work was horrifying to me. And that's one of the reasons I watched that video as well. That probably played a role in my skepticism towards the jabs. See, in Australia, you probably were the same in New Zealand. It took a while. We didn't get the jabs immediately.
Exactly.
We had
there was a lag time.
Extra time to think about it.
That's right.
And I was thinking about it. I was wondering, how does this work? Wow, this sounds really bad. It's not giving you a set amount of this thing, the spike protein, which we now know is pathogenic. Duh. COVID, right? If COVID's harmful, why wouldn't the jab be harmful? It's giving you the same thing. But I was thinking, okay, so it hijacks your cells and tells your cells to make the spike protein. That doesn't sound good at all. What if it doesn't turn off? How much is it making? Are we controlling that? Have we done enough studies to find out that we've controlled it just right and that it turns off at the right time? You mean those 2 months of studies that were done and they manipulated the data and even then couldn't show that there was a death benefit? Their own clinical trials, Pfizer and Moderna, couldn't show, with all the manipulation going on and all the conflicts of interest, because they're running their own trials for their own product, right? All the conflicts of interest involved, and they couldn't even show a death benefit. In fact, it was the opposite. There were more deaths in the jab group. So it's just, at every level, it's just been ridiculous. And it's like, where have people's brains gone?
As long COVID then, there's just the endless cycle of repeated infections of COVID because of negative efficacy of the vaccine.
It very well could be. I mean, I'm not at the stage yet that I deny COVID, that I deny that COVID could be harmful to people. And yet this issue of long COVID, I find very suspicious. It's very nebulous. The sort of symptoms described could just be post-viral syndrome, like that you could get from any respiratory infection, any respiratory disease. It's so fuzzy and it just sounds like bullcrap, really. And that's part of the discussion that we had in the Australian Journal of General Practitioners involving Professor Tindall. And yeah, a lot of us have been coming to the conclusion that it sounds like you might as well call it long vaccine, because there's a bunch of people who had the jab that are having these symptoms without even having COVID. So, I mean, maybe it is real and it's really caused by the spike protein. And that's why you'd see it from people who took the jab and people who got COVID, and whether those groups overlap or not. But the idea that, you know, long COVID is something you should be worried about from COVID and therefore you should go get the jab, same like myocarditis, I think is ridiculous. It's like the jab doesn't stop you from getting it. It arguably increases your chance of getting these things, long COVID, myocarditis, and of course other side effects that you wouldn't get just by getting COVID. So I don't know, just at every step, there's just things that don't add up. Unless you start thinking, which, you know, as an academic, you don't want to do, unless you start thinking, you know, maybe this was intentional.
Yeah, well, that's the end game thought, isn't it? So you're basically peeling back the layers of the onion every time. At some point, though, you'll get
and
to the core.
And crying all the way through.
Crying all the way, nice. But you hope to get to the core of it at some point. Yeah.
Eventually, yeah. Yeah, I see my skepticism growing by the day. I never was particularly fond of the flu vaccine. Back when I was a pharmacist, I rarely took it because it's a crapshoot. You don't know if they've even picked the right strains to focus on.
Yeah.
So it actually could be, if you've picked the wrong strain, it actually could be more harmful than helpful because, you know, potential side effects and immunosuppression for a while for no reason. Right. So I never was a big fan. And then you get that article coming out, I think it was published in Cell or a Cell journal, with St. Fauci as one of the co-authors basically admitting there's not really much point to getting a vaccine for respiratory illness because respiratory diseases, respiratory infections, you know, the bugs evolve so quickly that by the time you've produced the vaccine, it's too late. And this was St. Fauci was involved in that paper. It's just, and again, he has been one of the people heavily promoting the jabs and spreading the lie that it would stop infection and transmission. And yet here he is on this paper acknowledging that there's really not much point to respiratory vaccines. It's just.
Yeah, St. Fauci. Okay, just to wrap up, Raphael, what work do you have to still do to get to some conclusion? And the other one is, I take it you're back in the regular workforce now that disruption is over for you?
Oh, no, but getting back to the workforce is still a journey for me, still a long, hard slog. I'm still dealing with my case and the issues around that, the psychological injury that they caused me, that my case is revolving around. So I think that's going to take some time. I'm going to really focus on my case again. And I've been informed unofficially that even though the vaccine mandate is over for New South Wales health employees, you're not going to get your job back. If you applied for a job, I wouldn't get it.
Because you were a naughty person.
That's the impression I was given, that even though the mandate's over, they're still going to want you to be jabbed.
Well, that's vindictive.
Yeah. So maybe we'll do something around that in future. But I'm currently focused on my case. I've got 2 wins so far, and I've got 2 more wins to come before I can finally walk away from that, work on myself, get better. Little bits more of research I'll continue to do. I want to do an excess deaths little study eventually for Australia. I've done it for the EU just recently. That was my latest paper that was published, showing that the jabs correlate with excess deaths in the European countries, with Bulgaria and Romania, the least vaccinated countries, somehow having negative excess deaths. You know,
what a coincidence.
Yay for them. And I was told directly by a Romanian politician too that a good chunk of the vaccinated there aren't vaccinated. That's a part of the world where
you get away with that. Yeah, yeah.
So even more respect to Djokovic from Serbia for not doing that with all his money, all his power. He's a god there in Serbia. And Serbia's a place, you know, where you can get your way if you have a bit of money. And he didn't do that. He just said, no, I'm unjabbed and I will take the consequences with that. And, yeah, my country treated him just as they treated me, like garbage. So I'd like to do some sort of excess death study for Australia. I found some interesting things there. But I think overall, the way we're really going to find this out is to keep monitoring the health of the jabbed versus the unjabbed. I think you're going to keep seeing this negative effectiveness. You're going to keep seeing the unvaccinated just kick a butt, right? My health, you know, mentally, it's been hard with what's been going on and I'm finding my cases. But physically, in terms of COVID, I mean, it was nothing for me. We might just keep seeing the jab get COVID, pneumonia, everything else, cancers, and then heart problems. And then we're looking back and saying, well, what's the one thing that what's different between these two?
What does the big neon arrow point to? The big lit up arrow. Yeah.
Multiple all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, this way, they're right here. Well, I'm the same. I didn't take it. And I know many people who...
How are you still alive, may I ask? I don't understand.
I don't know. I think it's a miracle.
You're still alive? I thought...
Some kind of miracle.
Yeah. Maybe it's because you're so young.
Well, I'm not. That's the other thing. I was in the age group that, you know, should be gone by now. Yeah. But I haven't had anything perceptible.
Did you get COVID?
I tested positive once for it, but I had no symptoms.
Good for you.
And I said, well, if I don't feel it, I don't have it. And they didn't take that one on board. But I know plenty of people who have had all sorts of problems, you know, on the other side.
Yeah.
So, and they look at me like, what? You know, how did that happen? You must have been lucky. Well, no, I don't think so.
There's a lot of us that were lucky, huh?
Yeah, how do we do that, right? It's been really interesting chatting with you, Rafael Letesta, doctor and associate professor. It'll be interesting to see what happens with your case. Maybe we'll keep an eye on that and we can talk about that as those things come in. I hope everything goes well for you. Thank you for the work you've done. And thanks for coming on our radio station and talking about it. It's really interesting.
Thanks very much for allowing me to talk a little bit about my case and the research that came out of it. It's been very good.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.